Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with my host, my co-host, Vas Larikos. Vas, how are you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Very well. Draft, I think, was a successful one. And for, in my view, the Ravens are better positioned roster-wise compared to this point last year. So that's it's a good step in the right direction.
That is. I mean, I have some more serious long-term concerns about the roster. We'll talk about that a little bit in terms of the offensive line in particular. But I think first, we kind of want to talk about the resolution of two fifth-year options, both of which got taken care of this week. The first is Adafi Owe, picked up for 2025 for $13.25 million. Very reasonable price in my point of view.
Completely agree. Outside of the top 20 edge rushers this season, so you expect that list to expand even next season. So from that perspective, it's a value at the fifth year. And, you know, just some numbers to it. PFF charted him for 40 hurries, a 17.7 win percentage on pass, true pass sets, which is the best on the team last year, even better than Clowney. So this was pretty much a no-brainer in my opinion.
Yeah, in mine as well. The Ravens are a compound pressure team on a lot of their sacks. They got 60 sacks last year because they got a lot of good first pressure activity, primarily, I mean, from all three of Clowney, Van Noy, and Owe. But Owe was the best of the three, and that was terrific. I think he will pick up as a finisher, but if he goes more time and is a starter instead of a finisher, that'll be fine with me. And very valuable Ravens player, really making good on a lot of the freakish athleticism he has, even though a lot of people will tell you he's not. This is a hell of a football player they've got.
I completely agree there. Still ascending, expected to shoulder a heavy workload next year as sort of the anchor of the entire outside linebacker core. You almost, in a way, I think I would almost prefer that he didn't start putting up some gaudy finisher sack totals, because I think maybe the long-term deal would be able to, a little bit more team-friendly, a little bit more manageable. And as far as I'm concerned, I agree with DaCosta and the others who have mentioned, pressures are the name of the game. You know, getting sacks, they come in bunches sometimes, and not necessarily the man who generates them is recording the statistic. So best case scenario, I think he has a fine year in 2024, and he never sees this fifth-year option because he's on a cornerstone contract before that happens.
Yeah, that worked for me, certainly. One of the ones that was suggested, I saw this from Dan Reese, is how about they add 3 years for $51 million to Owe? First of all, if you could add 3 years to $51 million, Tim, playing year four, signed in year five, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'd do it right this moment. Another $17 million AAV for three more years after that. I can't remember if his idea was replace the money he's going to make under that fifth-year option. But either way, would love to see him re-sign with the Ravens, and I hope he's one of the cornerstone guys. They've got several that they now have to juggle, and they may lose someone between him and Linderbaum and Hamilton, unless one of their longer-term guys is let go, and that could be Mark Andrews, and it could be Marlon Humphrey.
Or Marcus Williams as well. That's sort of the transition from the – I guess 2021 to 2023 cornerstone group to now the 2024 and through, I guess, 2026, 2027 group. And that's the transition phase that teams have to make. But it's good to have those cornerstone player options where you have guys that you want to resign. Not all every team has that luxury. So, yeah, we'll see how Odafe plays out this final year of his first, you know, his fourth year of the rookie contract and the fifth. But I think with the big year, it would behoove the Ravens to get out in front of a long-term deal before the market continues to rise, because the cap is expected to continue to compound exponentially over the next few years.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where the cap's going. It's just had its biggest increase. Second biggest increase ever, I believe. One coming out of the COVID year had been more. But this was an outlier kind of year in terms of growth, and I am wondering if it's sustainable. But we'll see. And you know, certainly the Ravens need to understand what the future trend of the cap is, and I think they're very good at figuring that out. And you know, if you've got a flatter cap, you want to spend a little bit less in terms of cash each year, and make sure that you're not setting up a bunch of void year dollars that are going to hurt you more. If the cap is increasing, accelerating at a higher rate, then you can be more aggressive about spending now and winning.
Yes, completely agree. Our OTC projections expect, you know, and they're pretty plugged in, very significant growth over the next few years. I think it's also, not to take us down on a tangent, but the 18-game regular season schedule is really picking up steam in the last week. And that gives them more bargaining power at the negotiating table with the TV networks and all the different streaming services. And it seems like players are starting to come around to the 18-game schedule. As long as it includes two bye weeks, it seems, at least from the quotes I've seen, players would be willing to make that sacrifice.
Right. Well, two bye weeks is a real key, because we will watch football no matter who's playing. We'd rather watch our own team. But we'll watch football anyway when our own team is not playing. And that's a lot of additional games and eyeballs that get on the screen over a 20-week season. So it's not just one more game. It's two more weeks is the way I think of it in terms of that. But we'll create a very long season, you know, really one that will have management of your injuries will be a very significant situation. I think every season ticket holder will be thrilled to get rid of a preseason game.
Absolutely.
Nobody wants to pay for those. So we're just, you know, it's a good step in the right direction, I think, from the fans' perspective. I don't see that happening before the new CBA in, I think it's 2030, right? 2031, one of those two.
I don't remember the exact year. I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen before then. You know, I guess you'd have to, you know, amend the bylaws, and you'd have to have the Players Association agree with the commissioner. But, you know, Goodell sort of has a plan where he wants to extend the season all the way into President's Day weekend, to have that Monday after the Super Bowl sort of a quasi-federal holiday, which I think a lot of people that like to host Super Bowl parties would appreciate. So anyway, we'll see how it plays out. But as far as the cap's concerned, just bringing it back, I'm bullish on the cap. The NFL is, you know, they took over Christmas last year from the NBA, and I just think that they are the burning star that's consuming the media landscape really across the country.
Okay, that's very poetic there, by the way. But anyway, I think what would also be good is if what they are apparently planning to do is playing more international games. I'm not a fan of the Ravens playing internationally. I generally really don't like that. I certainly would never want them to give up a home game to play internationally. But it is a really good thing for the game. And one thing, while I don't want the Ravens playing internationally, I really want them going after fans internationally. Mm-hmm. That means Latin America, Europe, China. Be a real good place. China apparently is very plugged in with the Rams right now, but would really love to have more Asian fans and more European fans and more South American fans, for that matter. There's huge untapped markets there for the Ravens to get to. They can't let themselves be out of that, given their geographic position. In the United States is a relatively thin sliver of land between the Redskins. Commanders and you know, the Eagles and the other Northeast teams, they don't have a lot of population that they're working with in a fan base. You have a very rabid fan base, but just not a lot of population they're working
with. True. Well, the NFL seems to be sort of following the NBA model. If you look at the NBA playing the playoffs right now, several I don't know, a majority of the top group, handful of players are internationally born. And I think that's a product of the, what was that, the Dream Team with Magic and Michael and Larry and that one team they had way back, well, I think it was 92 or 94 Olympics. And now you see some of the best players. I don't know if that'll happen with the NFL necessarily, but there are a lot of Nigerian-born players in the NFL now, the last few years. This last draft had several Haitian-born players. So, you know, it's good to expand the game. The more the merrier.
Yeah, I know. I'm in terms of the population from which the game is drawn, from which the players are drawn, that's fantastic, and it's natural that that would grow as well. We had a number of Samoans and other people that you know, don't live in the continental United States playing the game. I'm all for that, and it's really worked out for baseball. But I'm more in favor of additional eyeballs on the screen from foreign countries paying for our product.
Completely
agree. Exporting that thing, and we're the beneficiaries of, as season ticket holders, are getting to go to these games, and just wonderful to have anybody else who wants to crowd around a TV anywhere else in the world join us.
Definitely.
All right, so let's move on. Rashad Bateman, 5th-year option, also settled, we'll say. He did not have it picked up, and apparently he reported late and did not accrue a year of service. He was put on a did not report list. The Ravens obviously were aware of this the whole way. This is, you know, in my mind, the sort of mistake very similar reminds you of Factscape and Doomerville.
Yes. So backdoor channels sort of gave us the background on this before the draft. When the news of the reported extension first broke, Bateman is now on his third agent already in his young career. Fortunately, the Ravens were able to leverage the mistake made by the agent into a very extremely team-friendly deal.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable deal when you look at it. A very back-loaded 3-year deal. Significant savings if the Ravens want to cut him prior to either 2025 or 2026. Let's bring this up here for a second because it is a 1-year deal with guaranteed salary of $1.05 million and another $5.075 million. So it's essentially $6.1 million for 2024. All right. And that was obviously more than he was going to make. But then there's an option for 2025, which costs the team another $4 million. And then another option for 2026, that'll another $6.75 million. And the Ravens can get out of it for $2.9 million in 2025 or for $6.75 million if he prior to 2026. So he doesn't ramp up his play. I mean, I think he is in danger of not seeing some of that.
Sure. It's team friendly from the perspective of their, you know, according to Brian, only $4.5 million guaranteed. Only $12.9 million in new money. So you're tacking on 2 years at a maximum. I guess not a maximum because I guess there are some escalators incentives, but still that is, you know, $6.5 million is well below market rate for a veteran non-rookie contract wide receiver two. It's cheaper than a lot of high-end wide receiver threes. So I agree, Bateman still has some work to do. I would not have been in favor of picking up the 5th-year option if he was even eligible, which apparently he wasn't. But, you know, if he can build up some chemistry with Lamar, get in the OTAs, do some practicing, improve his hands a little bit, and this could be one of the real value signings of the last decade or so in Ravens history.
It certainly could be. He's coming off a very bad year. So, I mean, he had a negotiating position that was not great, and he played with Lamar the whole year last year. So it's not like there are a lot of excuses like, oh, Tyler Huntley was throwing to me or anything like that. 2.0 yak and 6.6 yards per target, which is very bad. And a 64 passer rating throwing to him, which is unbelievably bad. It's not all hands. There were lots of questions about separation. There are lots of questions about, and both good and bad. So you see positive separation numbers that are out there from PFF primarily. And you can see really negative separation numbers, which put him about the 30th percentile using those same XY coordinates timed differently. So everybody's got the same information here, by the way. There is no other source of separation information other than those XY coordinates they use for the big data bowl and next gen stats and all that stuff. So It's just a matter of when you time it.
Very good point. Yeah. You know, I think he's maybe miscast a little bit as an exclusive X receiver. I think he does some of his best work on in breaking routes. An interesting note, to my knowledge, Ken, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first drafted wide receiver to receive a contract extension in Ravens team history.
Holy mackerel. First ever drafted receiver, period?
Period.
My God, I've got to check that out. That's terrible. Oh,
so if you look back on it, Stokely came back, I think, but he wasn't. And Jermaine Lewis went to the Texans in the expansion draft. And after that, it's been you know, let him go. Even Torrey Smith was probably the best, but he went to the Eagles for, I think it was $8 million. From the sourcing I've seen, this is the first one in the history since 1996.
Okay, that's worth a tweet. But I'll tell you this. It's amazing that there hasn't been like a sixth-round wide receiver special teams player who has hung on and been around like Tylan Wallace or Chris Moore or somebody like that. Wallace isn't there yet, but Moore did get there and was allowed to walk. That is just incredibly bad. Whoa, is that bad? I want to get back to something you said.
No, please.
I just want to get back to something you said about Bateman being the X. The Ravens don't have an X receiver right now other than Bateman. Now, one of the things that I like to say about the X receiver is he has a significant amount of the budgeted space for the offense. Offense needs space. You always hear that. Billick, you got to be as deep as the deep, as wide as the wide, you know, widest. A significant budget for the offensive space is on that X receiver. It's in his hands to make the best use of it. So you need a guy who runs pretty much all the routes, can get to the top of the stem, wiggle, make that defensive back miss, and make a play, then get separation to get the football. Your quarterback has to be in sync with that. I don't think all of Bateman's problems are his. I think a lot of it has been scheme and Lamar. And frankly, they need to scheme the ball with him as the first read more often, and Lamar needs to have more confidence in throwing the deep ball to him and overthrow it by less. But Bateman is the only guy on the team right now who really runs the full route tree and is able to break back effectively and lose a guy at the top of the stem. And Devontae Walker is not that guy, certifiably not that guy. We hope we can make him into a two-way hitch and go guy. He's been very good on verticals, but if he, in order to be really effective at the NFL level, he's going to have to come back for the football. So, and that's before you figure out anything else about extended plays and how else he might be involved. I don't think he has that much problems going over the middle of the field, but he's not the full route runner like Bateman is. And the Ravens are making a big investment in a very key player in Bateman. I really hope it works out because the solution is not otherwise obvious to me as to who would be the X receiver.
I agree with that. We fortunately, again, as you mentioned at the top of this you know, paragraph conversation, the Ravens can get out of it if it doesn't work out, and there will be more intriguing wide receivers in the next draft class. I promise you that.
Just a little thing on the margin, reported by Jeff Schriebeck today. The international roster exemption was granted to Adafi Owe. And I think that there are probably a lot of teams that already have a African and Nigerian, maybe a European that's already on their roster, that they have the option to do this. But it does give the Ravens one more player in camp. So instead of a 90-man roster, they get a 91. It's a big advantage, or it's an advantage. I don't know if it's a big advantage. It's an advantage. And it'd be nice to not always be going through the process or to have a little more elasticity to when you have to go through the process of cutting someone in order to bring a new player in during camp. They handed a roster every day at camp. And I'm sure you've been there at some point, Voss, but they handed a roster every day at camp. And it changes every day. Yeah. You know, there are changes to it. And it's interesting. They talk about all the releases and whatnot that occur and who's there each day, but they have to do a lot of gymnastics, even with a 90-man roster, to keep the proper amount of competition around to get ready to build their practice squad. And I don't think the typical fan is fairly insulated from that component. You you know, you don't really see it until you see a preseason game, then you really think about it, and you kind of have a sense that people are going to be cut. But it's quite an effort to manage that roster and just get ready to play preseason games and then to build your 53 and practice squad.
Yes, yes. I had a press pass a few years ago for training camp. The first thing you do when you get behind the rope is you start checking numbers, and you're working with – sometimes you're working with a partner. I was often working with Kyle Barber, and you do offense, I do defense, and who's missing. And then probably about once every couple of days, there'd be a guy that was on the sheet yesterday that's not on the sheet today, but you didn't know anything about it until Coach John Harbaugh took the podium after practice, so everybody would be wondering. So this little anecdotal story there, but definitely a lot of juggling, and one more spot is one more spot. So, you know, it's a benefit. Maybe not a huge one, a small one, but still something.
All right. Now we've talked a ton about the draft. Really appreciate, by the way, Voss, great job. Be my co-host on day two of the draft. Really had a lot of fun going through that. Obviously, day two, a fairly productive day for the Ravens in terms of who they got in rounds two and three. But regardless of that, there are a number of unresolved questions from this draft. And that's kind of the one thing I really haven't had a show about yet. So I thought you and I would do it. But yes. Why don't we just alternate here and take us through your biggest unresolved question to start with.
So for me, it's clearly safety, backup safety. I did the post-draft roster outlook for Baltimore Beatdown the day after the draft. This has been my tradition for many years now. And safety is the one position that I identified that they could and probably should add a veteran. Most of the roster is in pretty good shape, but whether Kyle Hamilton is playing big nickel or on the back end, you still have very scant depth. Not extremely optimistic that Kane, the seventh rounder, is going to be more than a special teamer. Ardarius Washington is listed as a safety. I think he's a slot corner only. Doesn't have the size or necessarily the range to play the back end. TJ Tampa is a player who, even before the draft, on my other podcast with Yuri, I posed the idea, could he play safety? He has the length for it and zone-based system at Iowa State. However, you still need at least four or five or six guys. Bo Braid, the UDFA, will probably be one of those, but you need more at safety. Who was that player going to be? Was it worth paying up for one of the quote-unquote mid-priced, mid-tier safeties, considering you're pretty strong almost everywhere else? You still have Justin Simmons out there, Micah Hyde, and Eddie Jackson of the Bears, who's somebody that I have always been fond of, had a really good year about 4 years ago as a sort of a rangy guy, but a player I liked coming out of Alabama. Or you're going to come back with a Darryl Worley or somebody else. But anyway, long story short, safety is the biggest unresolved question post-draft for me.
Yeah, it's a problem. They did not address a free safety at all. And you know, I talk about, you know, when you have multiple strong safeties, you talk about them being versatile. But in truth, it means you don't have a free safety. And the Ravens were blessed to have three free safeties last year, if you include Hamilton in that group. I think Hamilton is wasted when he's playing. Well, certainly wasted playing single high, but he's wasted even. His value is mitigated substantially playing even on the back end and split field. So we want to get him up there as often as you can in the slot. And to do that, they really need to have another split field guy they can trust. They need to trust him in two dimensions. Number one is they need to trust him to understand zone coverages. They need to trust him to read the quarterback. They need to trust his instincts. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I don't think any one of the guys they have currently meets that need. Not Braid. There's one guy, but not Braid, and not Kane is the way you pronounce his name, because we've been calling him Citizen Kane now, which is really bad. He's Citizen Kane.
You know, I may be incorrect on that pronunciation. If I am, I apologize.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay. No, and I mean, his first name is Sanusi, so certainly possible. It's not what we say, but anyway, it's really bad if true. But anyway, I think Sanusi is a dime candidate only. I don't think, and special teams player, I don't think he gives the Ravens anything in terms of a split field role. And I don't think they need a strong safety. It's too duplicative of what Hamilton does. So whether Hamilton's back or front, you really have that position covered. And if to the degree he could be a run fit guy, that's not obviously all that important. They have a practice squad guy. There's one other practice squad safety besides Braid, and I'm forgetting his name right now, who might be a guy. Actually, he's a practice squad corner. It's Cooper, I believe, who could potentially be a back end guy. But that's like, you know, you're kind of betting on Jeremy Lucien again this year, which would be, you know, a conversion. You'd have to teach him. TJ Tampa, it's not obvious he's going to get a ton of playing time, but it's obvious to me he's going to be pretty critical as a corner in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Humphrey nearing the end of his contract and being a decision on what you have to do with him, and Stevens potentially out the door, you're gonna want to make sure you stay young at corner. And he does a lot of things really well. I like him, so it's not an issue of moving it back there, but he is a guy who probably could handle that role from an instincts perspective. And I think that generally a good cover three corner is generally going to be a good guy for doing that unless he's a really bad tackler. And,
right.
You know, Marcus Peters is a good example of a guy who probably was miscast at safety because you just don't want him as the last line of defense.
Sure. I guess at this point, the emergency third safety would probably be Brandon Stevens, but as well as he played a corner last year, I don't know if I would say that I've ever really seen him excel on the back end. He certainly did some good things while he was a safety, sort of playing as an overhang linebacker, closer to the line of scrimmage in the first couple years of his career. And I would agree at this point, after the pick of Nate Wiggins, it's probably less likely that he's going to be retained after his rookie contract expires.
Daryl Worley, I believe, will be re-signed unless they know something about the medicals that they're not telling us about. I mean, it just seems like he's a very good fit right now for this team. Looked great on the back end last year in very limited playing time. But I don't know that you want him to be the starter or the near full-time player that Geno Stone was last year. But I want him as that extra safety who fills in case anyone gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely want him as the fourth safety on the team. So yeah, it would make sense to me to get Worley and maybe another veteran. I don't think they've resolved their issues. Otherwise, they can figure it out on the practice squad between one or two players there and then decide who they want to retain. But anyway, safety, obviously one of the big issues.
Yes, agreed. Okay, you're up, Ken.
Yeah, I'll go up with a quick one. All right, I'll leave left tackle for you because I think talk about this, but I'll just go with a quick one here since I've been talking for a while. Is passing up on a guard for Leary, I think, was a big mistake. I think they could have had Leary later. I think Crispin Mahogany was not still available actually at that point, but they had they could have solved their safety issue at that problem too by getting Trey Taylor of Air Force would have been the guy I would have chose.
Ed Reed's cousin. Yes, I actually thought that was going to be the pick when they turned in the card for Leary. Leary, I guess I'm a little bit more sanguine about it than some others. Just you can't teach arm talent, so maybe you can improve the turnovers. But getting back to guard, DaCosta did the lounge, and I didn't catch the whole thing. Haven't had a chance to yet. But I believe he said their entire guard board got wiped out between the second and third round. So they pivoted. And I don't think that's a huge issue. I know some folks are up in arms about it. And how could you possibly not take a guard? They have bodies at guard. They have five bodies essentially at guard. But I do think that if they are going to supplement an area with a veteran that's not a safety, I would say probably offensive guard, and Dalton Risner would probably be the most likely after safety.
So, they got Sam Ack in the late rounds. I look at him as pretty much a center only, but the Ravens have been continually excellent at developing not particularly athletic people into good pulling guards, including people who are in the 5'2s or 5'3s running the 40,
Bozeman
and Hurst. I mean, these are guys who were Dallas Sanders' methods of teaching, I think, are very effective at getting those guys the footwork correct. And we've been scoring a fair amount of 2005 offensive line play. It's actually taken us way too long to get through this the season back then. The Ravens have all sorts of footwork issues on the offensive line, including the center stepping on the foot of players. And there was a single play where Mike Flynn steps on the foot of both guards on the same play. And it's just one of these ridiculous things that you'll almost never see. But if you don't have good footwork at center, don't have people who know what they're doing at guard in terms of the angles and whatnot, which Dallas Sanders has been wonderful at teaching, then you end up with clumsiness occurring on the field, and the Ravens have been good at avoiding that. And I think it's a possibility that Semek could be useful in that respect. He has not been a good pass blocker. He has not been a good pass blocker in college, and that's the thing I'm primarily concerned about.
Yes. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I give the Ravens benefit of doubt at the positions where they have proven to find gems and develop players, and offensive guard certainly classifies as one of those throughout the history. I mean, what round was Mulitalo, Ken?
Four.
So, they can find guards, they can develop guards. One position that they have been somewhat hit or miss on, maybe had the best player in the history of the position in Jonathan Ogden. But they've had some years where they've been pretty lean and really struggled at left tackle. That's probably another unresolved issue, because I'm not confident in Rosengarten's ability. We did the day two show. I preferred Kingsley at that point. I still prefer Kingsley at that point. We'll see how that plays out. This was an opportunity to find a succession plan behind Ronnie Stanley, and I don't think that they necessarily did that in this draft. Not the end of the world. You still have McCary if Stanley is banged up for a few games here and there to get you through this year. And maybe Ronnie plays well this year and you get him on another three-year deal with maybe a lower annual per season, but maybe not. And maybe left tackle is your main need next year and you're picking in the 30s again and you have no recourse, no avenue to really find that position, that long-term player that you need at what is probably the scarcest position in the entire league.
Yeah, I would agree. And you could even say it's scarcer than quarterback at some points, because you don't have any backup left tackles. There's just no backup left tackle. There are a bunch of backup quarterbacks in this league of varying levels of success. And the problem is there's only a few great ones, but there aren't 12 great left tackles in the National Football League right now. And there certainly are the 40th best is not going to be to the top left tackle what Tyler Huntley was to the top quarterback. So you end up really having a significant drop off in quality at left tackle as possible. Huge variance in impact on the game at left tackle. I in the first round, we're on. I actually wanted Suamata Ia there. Actually, my primary thing was to trade up for Guyton. Find a way to get to 27 or 28, trade up for Guyton. You know, got lucky the Chiefs traded with the Buffalo and went up and got Worthy, which I thought I could not believe that they did that. They didn't have to. I couldn't believe they did, but they did. But then that left Dallas with the opportunity. And once again, Dallas traded back right in front of the Ravens. And the Ravens could have done something about it, but they've now burned the Ravens a couple of different times by picking one spot in front of them. And this was a bad situation, not dissimilar to the 2007 draft when the 49ers jumped up to draft Joe Staley and the Ravens were left with Ben Grubbs, perfectly decent player. I think the Ravens certainly have more than that with Wiggins. They have a player that's a special value player in Wiggins. But I think that they had to pay for the left tackle situation to be resolved at some point. And that was a potential point to do it. Yes, they would have given away the opportunity to get Wiggins. They might not have been sure that they got Tampa later on, so they wouldn't have been really comfortable with what was going on there for a few rounds of the draft. They might have even drafted Tampa too early. They might have gone for round three. They might have gone to him instead of Adisa Isaac. But in terms of what happened, I don't like the fact that they wasted their opportunity for a one-year ramp-up on a player like Guyton if they wanted to trade up, or Suamata Ia if they wanted to stay put. I was actually in favor of Suamata Ia in round one, and they got another chance in round two, which kind of shows I'm too high on Suamata Ia. But they still didn't take him then. They took a fairly what I would consider to be a lower ceiling player in Rosengarten. I think he can help them, but I think I don't think he'll end up at left tackle.
I think that's really the question there. The ceiling versus floor debate, and Rosengarten has a higher floor and Suamata Ia has a higher ceiling. And we made our list last time we recorded the show of our top or our five or six most wanted at 30 based on the consensus. We both had, if I believe, Mims, Guyton, and Wiggins in that order. Wiggins and Guyton were really, really close for me, really splitting hairs. I think right before I was reviewing my notes, right before, and I had Wiggins and I flip-flopped him with Guyton. I'm very satisfied with Wiggins, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But this was a loaded offensive tackle class with a lot of size and shape pool for left tackles, and they didn't necessarily get one. So, it does leave a question that not every draft class has this many, nine offensive tackles in the first round or whatever it was. So we'll see how it goes. If you're ready, I'll move on to my next one. So to me, it's going to be wide receiver. I am pretty satisfied by the top four. I think they have complementary skill sets. I am pretty high on Tez Walker. I would have been happy with him in the third, as we were discussing during the live stream there. And he's a one trick, but it's a valuable trick, one of the most valuable tricks. So I like that trick. How does the back end of the receiving crop shake out? You have Wallace entering year four, so he's a potential better year too early than year too late guy. You have Hardy, who has a guaranteed contract, or mostly guaranteed, who's probably going to be the primary return man, I'd imagine, unless they come up with some sort of a diabolical plan there. Are those your six, or do you want another veteran? Or what? So Gallup signed, who was a player they brought in on a visit. Beckham still is not signed. And Kyle Van Noy, when choosing, I think he changed his number, and he said he's not going to take Beckham's number because there's still a chance of reunion. I know you're not super high on Odell Beckham. I have a little bit of a soft spot for him. I would be interested for a very cheap number, $2-3 million. I think that would be worth it, even if it does stump Bateman a little bit. You have Bateman for a couple more years now, so he can make up that time. But I do think, how does the back end of the receiving core shake out is still unresolved to an extent in comparison to some other position groups where it's pretty much stone cold lock, the entire depth chart at this point.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the X receiver is not really resolved in terms of who the backup is, so that kind of limits the Ravens' options. there's a price at which I'd want Odell back on a rate basis. He was fine this last year. The problem was the salary was way too high. But I'm sorry, on a per target basis, that's what I mean by rate basis, not in terms of dollars per reception or dollars per anything. But if you could have him for $2.5 million, sure. I don't think Odell is signing for that. I think he's going to demand more, and he had a pretty good, you know, as I said, rate season this last year, including a good yards per target number. And I think some other team is probably going to want that more, even understanding the limitations of injuries and whatnot. And, you know, they're going to be willing to pay $5 or $6 million. I really hope it's not the Ravens. Really hope it's not the Ravens. And you mentioned the stunning abatement. I don't think that's a small issue at all. They've got an investment in Bateman that is largely in the value of those two option years. It's not, they haven't signed at all. They haven't signed all that money over to him. It's in the value of those two options they have for 25 and 26. And in order to find out what the value of those things are, you need to have him have targets this year, which means you have to have him out there at the X, and you have to have him making moves and getting the ball in his hands to see if he can do anything after the catch. So I would not be in favor of bringing Odell back and having Lamar demonstrate again that he trusts Odell and he doesn't trust Bateman.
Good point. Very fair point. Very. So maybe not Bateman. Last year there was some late movement in the receiver market. I wouldn't be surprised if there is some again this year. Maybe a player on the last year or two of his career that wants to try to chase a ring and is ready for a complimentary role, who's released by another team and who can be brought on cheaply. But if you have one $4 million, $5 million bullet left to shoot, I would shoot that at safety, definitely.
Okay. I'm all for that. I don't even think they have to go that high, by the way. I think you can go real cheap at safety. Maybe NLTBEs, whatever it might be. I'll give you another one that I'm not real happy about. They did not make a pick on the defensive line, so they didn't get younger there, and that's been a general problem. Broderick Washington is aging out of his deal. Brent Urban is an 11th year guy who is now going to really need to find his replacement at some point. We're happy for Brent, but honestly, they need another guy. They did get a 5-tech on the practice squad who I think is a promising chance to replace Urban if he gets hurt. But hopefully he's a guy who can, I hope they find another real draftable defensive line gem, at least by this next draft. But that was unresolved to me. You've got the same five guys who played all the snaps last year. You can't keep enough fingers and toes crossed to make that happen again in 2024.
Yes, completely agree there. Urban is the one player they signed that would be, you know, relatively easy handshake deal because he has very low guarantees in comparison to all the other veterans, Johnson, Hardy, et cetera. Even Chris Board received more guaranteed, significantly more. They still have Rayshard Nichols and Bravion Roy, so pretty much the top seven is completely intact. I think it's a product of where the board fell. We're sitting there watching the top around two, and defensive linemen are just getting picked, reached, and we're cheering it on. But then, you know, it thins out. So we'll see what the next year's class looks like. I am very, very high on Travis Jones for a breakout third season. With Matabike really and Pierce really anchoring that could be one of the better defensive lines the Ravens have had in many years. But you want to have the succession plan at a position that is becoming more premium and more scarce by the year, it seems.
Yeah, well said. Your turn.
That's pretty much all I had, to be honest, Ken. I think this roster is in pretty good shape. They're not looking for they need an edge rusher and a corner, which are harder positions to find at this point of the offseason. It's more positions that have a little bit more supply at this point.
I guess I'll have one question here is that I don't really think they have a Sam succession plan for Van Noy. So maybe Ham is a guy who can play that role by being on IR this last year. That's hurt his chances, I think. And we'll see. I assume he makes the practice squad at this point, but it also wouldn't shock me if they went out and got another pass rusher, or another veteran pass rusher that can hang around with them. So
Yeah, I could see that.
Anyway, it ended up being not a problem at all last year in terms of really needing that flexibility to rush the passer by having somebody drop. But it's a nice luxury if you have it. And it would be, I think it would be a good thing if they could get one. That said, Ravens are probably right now in a better position in terms of the possibility of an outside linebacker dropping than 22 of 32 teams, maybe more, because OA can certainly drop even from the rush side, and you can have your Sam guy drop if it's Van Noy. Very few teams have two options that good. Maybe I'm overstating the problem a little bit, frankly.
Well, and then when you couple it with the coverage ability from the inside linebackers, which is probably one of the better groups in the league, and the safeties, I think it's definitely a great luxury to have. I would consider it a luxury at this point. Any thoughts on Isaac's ability as a potential Sam? Has any coverage notes you had on him?
Yeah, he actually had fairly few. Let me go back to it right now. Fairly few total coverage snaps, as 11.7% of the time with solid results. That's what he had. So actually, that's not terrible. It's not a traditional kind of Sam number. But one of the things I always say about college Sams is their traits don't usually become apparent until they get to the NFL, because they're needed so much as pass rushers. Penn State, much more sophisticated in terms of how they run their defense. So they have their outside guys drop more. And 474, 40, that's usually fine for covering a tight end. And he's got that good arm length that often helps with that too. So he could be, he could be a guy that works out there. But you got me feeling less bad about this problem now.
All right, good. I'm glad to hear that. I love when I can shine some optimism. But yeah, outside linebacker group is I could see him at. I think Justin Houston's still available if you need, a little bit of juice, or somebody gets nicked up or something like that. I know. I think Bud Dupree might still be out there too. But for the most part, they're pretty settled. And I almost think get a good safety, get a veteran that you could, a reliable veteran, maybe two. And see what the offensive line looks like. And if you need to make a move, you have the trade deadline, in October. So, yep.
All right. Outstanding. I'm thinking of when you're talking about Justin Houston, I'm thinking somewhere on a beach, somewhere in the Caribbean or elsewhere, he's sipping a pina colada or whatever he's having right now and thinking, I really am not taking calls until about August 30th. Right. He's a guy who's not real crazy about coming to camp. Not
sure.
Anyway, speaking of that, I'm going to be on vacation for a while, and so we won't have a Friday morning GM show. I think for almost a month. That's possible. If anything happens during the next week, we'll have one more at least. But if it's a relatively quiet week, I think we'll be talking to you around the beginning of June. Voss, really enjoyed doing this off-season stretch and the draft and whatnot. Just a ton of fun. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Completely agree, Ken. This is a blast. Appreciate all their support from all our listeners. Wish you very happy travels and hope you have an enjoyable trip. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Beatdown, VASILIS Beatdown, co-managing editor and author for BaltimoreBeatdown.com.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. And the mic is yours if you would like it. I have a couple plans for shows coming up soon. The first is for more of the recollection series. So we have a few still in the tank, but we'll be putting some of those up. Would like to get more recorded. And number two is to have the two players series will be starting come the beginning of June. That's looking at two players at a time, one offense, one defense. You give me thoughts about how they fit into the Ravens' plans for 2020. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you when we next talk to you on Friday Morning GM.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.